on today's Run to the Top podcast.
The more time people spend out on the trails, out in the woods, exercising in general, the healthier they're going to be, the happier they're going to be, and the more they're going to appreciate this world that we're in and the communities that we live in, and the more that we're going to look out for each other and take care of this planet. And that's something that's really important to me.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. Today's interview is with James Varner, co-race director and owner of Rain Shadow Running and founder of the U.S.'s first trail running film festival. James started running ultras in 2001 and organizing races in 2004. His approach to directing races comes from the idea that he is throwing a party for friends that also happens to involve running on some of the toughest trails in the Pacific Northwest. The settings he and Team Rain Shadow choose for their races are a combination of challenging terrain with some of the most visually stunning scenery in the United States thrown in for good measure. Coinciding with the growth of the sport of trail and ultra running, James had the idea for showing trail running films and videos in theaters all around the country. Most recently, he has added music festivals to his organizing palette. The festivals include trail running and other outdoor recreation opportunities like hiking, paddling, rock climbing, yoga, and mountain biking during the day to go along with the music at night. Today's interview will focus on the Trail Running Film Festival started by James in 2013. We will share stories of some of the amazing runners featured in those films. This year's 2018 series is showing throughout the USA from October through December and may show up in your neighborhood. Let's get more details directly from the source. James Varner, welcome to Run to the Top.
Oh, thanks, Stephanie. It's great to be on the show.
I'm excited to hear about all of this year's films, as many as you have time to talk about. But first, let's start with those four basic questions that I always ask at the beginning of the interview. How old are you now? Where were you born? Where do you live? And what is your favorite type of run or your favorite distance?
Well, I'm 41 years old. I live in Winthrop, Washington, which is on the eastern and sunny side of the North Cascades National Park in Washington State. And my favorite distance to run, I like to say that it's 100 miles, but I seem to have a lot more success at the shorter distance races. So I'm not, I feel like I'm conflicted in my head, I think. But in my head, I definitely like the idea of running really far. And next year, I actually am trying to set the goal. I haven't quite settled on what I'm going to do, but partly inspired by some of these films that we're showing, I want to run a lot further than 100 miles. Some 200-mile races out there now that are growing in popularity. And then also there's just some really long trails that I could run, you know, not necessarily for a race, but just to run the distance and cover the trail and see all the sights you can see. And so I'm considering maybe running as far as up to 500 miles, maybe in one shot tomorrow, next year.
Would that be with support? I guess you'd almost have to have support for something like that, or a lot of logistics ahead of time.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely two ways to go, the supported way or the unsupported way. The supported way usually lends to being able to be more of a runner, whereas the unsupported way, especially for something as long as like maybe 500 miles through the mountains, you're going to be carrying a backpack that has quite a bit of weight in it. So you're going to be going much slower and maybe not even running at all. And so I've got to still make that decision of what I want the run to feel like and be like. My long-term goal, it's been my five-year goal for probably almost 20 years now, would be to run the entire Pacific Crest Trail, which is 2,600 miles from Mexico to Canada.
Yeah.
And I would like to make an additional step in that direction in 2019. So that's why I'm thinking something in the 200 to 500 mile range to go significantly beyond the 100 mile distance, which I've done multiple times now. And so I'd like to take that next step towards going really far.
Yeah. Well, good luck to you. And, you know,
thanks.
Really no limits to what can be accomplished, but you do realize that you just kind of have to set parameters on how you're going to make it happen.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so, and I just realized I forgot one of the four questions, was where was I born?
Uh-huh.
Not just when was I born. So I was born on the other side of the country. I was born in Southern Maryland, which was a long, far distance from the mountains. You know, it was at least a 3-hour drive probably to the closest mountains. And in the county that I grew up in, we were surrounded by water. We had two rivers around us, the Potomac River and the Patuxent River. And then we also had the Chesapeake Bay, but we didn't have any trails. So I think the longest trail when I was a kid growing up in our entire county was 1 mile long.
Oh, my gosh.
Which just happened to be in the park where I grew up playing soccer. And so this kind of ties in partly to you know, how I had the leanings towards being a runner. And so we'd have our soccer practice, you know, at this kind of normal park with a bunch of baseball fields and soccer fields and basketball courts. But then it also had some woods with a 1 mile long single track trail, which was very twisty and turny and had some hills and had a creek crossing. And after practice each day, the coach would have us run that trail as, you know, part of our training. And I loved it. It was probably my favorite part of practice. And I usually was the first kid to finish. And at one point, even our coach had asked me to slow down and run with the other kids because they were getting lost. There were a few little intersections or whatever, and they didn't know where to go. And he asked me to slow down and run with everybody so they wouldn't get lost. And I actually started crying because it was my favorite thing to be able to run fast on that trail. So so that was, you know, when I was in elementary school and middle school. And I think that's kind of where I first kind of got the trail running bug.
Well, that was actually my first question for you. So you answered it beautifully and with lots of detail.
Oh, great.
Yeah. And I know that you also had an experience meeting someone who was running the Appalachian Trail. And that, I don't
right,
know
yes.
when that came, but it was several years after what you're talking about right now.
Yeah. So I, you know, I ran cross country in high school, and then after high school, I didn't really go to college. I went to college for half a semester, and it just wasn't the right thing for me, and or at least not at the time. And I instead somehow got the idea in my head to thru-hike the Appalachian Trail. At the time that I got the idea, I was probably 19 or 20, and I'd never gone backpacking before. As a family, we'd gone camping, car camping, but you know, just right to a, you know, a campsite that you would just drive right up to, and we'd go for some short hikes, and sometimes even on the Appalachian Trail. But I don't remember when I kind of realized that people actually walked from Georgia to Maine. On this trail. I don't know when that came into my head, but at some point it came into my head and I thought, okay, well, I'm going to do that. But since I didn't know what I was doing, I tried to read as many books about backpacking as I could. And this was back in the late 90s. So the internet, there wasn't a ton of information on the internet, but I tried to soak up whatever I could from the internet. And one of the things I found out about was this really cool 4-day conference / reunion in the mountains of West Virginia, where a lot of the people who had through hiked the Appalachian Trail or hiked big sections of it came together to hang out, but also to share knowledge and to kind of teach each other things. And so people were doing workshops on how to make your own backpack or how to make your own tent, or classes on how to, you know, cook better food than just, you know, regular freeze-dried food or stuff like that. And this one guy was giving a slideshow on running the entire Appalachian Trail. He ran it in 52 days, David Horton from Virginia. And I was just blown away. And I knew that I had to go see that because, you know, I'd ran cross country and I'd ran some 5Ks and some 10Ks after I graduated from high school. But I didn't know anybody ran more than a marathon. I just never heard of anything like that, you know, and this being the late 90s, you know, trail running and ultra running wasn't quite in the mainstream like it is now. And so I went to the slideshow and was blown away and inspired. And I talked to David afterwards and he was very encouraging and supportive and suggested, you know, there's numerous races all over the country, you know, 30 miles, 50 miles, 100 miles. And I just right there on the spot made up my mind that I was going to run these races after I got done through hiking the Appalachian Trail. And so that's how I got started in the sport. I feel like I was always a kid running around in the woods, but this kind of gave me some structure for it.
So that was the beginning of a major life change for you.
Yeah. The Appalachian Trail in general, I didn't realize it at the time. It was a big change. You know, after doing the Appalachian Trail, I moved to the West Coast because I wanted to be in an area of the country that I felt like embraced the outdoors more so than what I was experiencing on the East Coast, where there was a lot more hustle and bustle and traffic and tons of people. I kind of wanted to be in a place with more wilderness and bigger mountains. And so I wound up on the East Coast or on the West Coast, but also, yeah, starting with my very first race, which I did two 50Ks before I left the East Coast. And at both of those races, I didn't know a single person at the race, but the community there, the runners there were so welcoming that, you know, they just made me feel like part of the family right away. And which was another thing that I experienced on the Appalachian Trail that was really amazing was the community of backpackers were very welcoming and you get to spend a lot of time with them out on the trail and get to know each other. And the same thing can happen during a long trail run. You know, you get to really know the people you're out there with and then afterwards hanging out with them. You know, so it's falling almost accidentally into that community of runners, ultra runners, trail runners, did give my life a different direction. It took a while before it became what it is today. And if you'd asked me back in 2001 or 2002, even 2003, if one day I was going to be making a living directing races and doing other stuff related to running, and I wouldn't have believed it. So I feel really lucky to be where I'm at right now.
Well, as you said, it's been kind of a transition for you and coming to the West Coast. I'm a West Coast girl. And so I know it's just an amazing place both to run and the natural beauty here, including the Pacific Crest Trail and so many mountains all the way from Southern California all the way up to, beyond Washington, but, you know, just in mountains. And you have been running trail races for a long time, and then you started organizing trail runs yourself. And then you moved into this idea of a film fest in 2013. So that's quite recent. But what caused you to get interested in organizing a trail running film fest?
Yeah, well, that, again, also kind of happened on accident, you know, just kind of being in the right place at the right time in a certain way. With our races, we always pick locations that are kind of destination locations where people are going to travel to and spend the whole weekend and stay for, you know, at least a night. And so with our very first race, our very first rain shadow running race, the Orcas Island 50K and 25K, it's on an island that takes about an hour long ferry ride to get to. And it's a couple hours north of Seattle. So it's out of the way, but it's a beautiful place. And so once you get there, you want to stay there. And so what started happening very organically with this race was, folks would be hanging out the night before or the night after the race. We have this, it's kind of like a summer camp kind of location in the middle of the state park where the race is held. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of cabins that have bunk beds in it. And then there's like a big communal building with a commercial kitchen and a big space for everyone to hang out in. And so this space had a TV and a DVD player. And I brought a few trail running DVDs and we'd put them in the player and push play. And we'd just sit around and watch these movies together. And in the old days, you know, the race was a lot smaller. Back in 2006, we only had 67 runners in the race. So, you know, there's only a couple of dozen of us sitting around the TV.
Yeah.
But within a few years, the race grew, you know, to 200, 300 runners. And so all of a sudden the room was packed and we're trying to sit around and watch movies on a little TV. And, you know, you can't hear the sound and you can't see the picture. And it just got to the point where there was too many people and it just wasn't working. And so we kind of shelved the idea for a couple of years until we created a new race that was the Gorge Waterfalls 50K, which was outside of Portland. And kind of the place where we all hung out for that race before and after the race was this really neat hotel. Portland has this chain of independent hotels that are all historic buildings that have been renovated and turned into really fun spaces that have restaurants and bars, and some of them have movie theaters. Some of them have even like stage and music setups where they have bands come and play. So, so this one hotel that was kind of the headquarters for the race had a 125 seat movie theater that was attached to one of their restaurants. So you could bring in the food and the beer and watch trail running movies. And so immediately I was like, this is what we need. You know, this is a real theater. So that way people can actually, you know, see and hear the movies. And that show that we did with that race sold out in like an hour.
Wow.
Those 125 seats were just gone instantly. And so people who couldn't get into the theater were like, well, you need to show this in, you know, Eugene or in Seattle or in Bellingham or, you know, in Bend, you know, various places around the Northwest, you know, right, where they live.
Right.
And with enough prodding, especially there was one guy from Portland who was like, you've got to do this. And so I was like, okay. And so that first or that following spring, we did, I think it was a 12 city tour, just to cities around the Northwest. And again, the reaction from the runners, from the audience was just really enthusiastic. And it was really fun to give these films their proper showing, you know, with the real, you know, theater sound and the giant screen. And because, you know, most of us, you know, we watch these trail running movies, you know, on our computers at home, or maybe your local running store will, you know, bring in a projector and a screen. And that's, you know, that's fun. Those are both great ways to do it. And those ways are never going to change. But to do it with on the big scale that we do it, where, you know, you've got these comfortable theater seats, and we always go to theaters that serve beer because trail runners love their beer. And we try to make it a really fun evening where, you know, a lot of times we come together under the pressure of a race or for a group run or a training run. And maybe you go out and get dinner afterwards or have beers afterwards, but there's kind of always that the race is kind of the main focus, or the training is the focus, or you're dirty and sweaty and you don't really want to go out and be social. And so this is like one of those rare nights where you're watching other people run, you're listening to other people's stories, but you're coming together with your friends and meeting new people in your towns and having this fun celebration of the sport without the stress and the pressure of actually having to lace up your own shoes and go for a run. And it's just been great.
How do you actually choose the films that you show? Maybe that's changed over the last few years too.
Well, I still have a lot of say in what we show. In the early days, it was totally up to me.
Uh-huh.
Now there's so many more films out there. It's a great time for the sport. It's you know, the sport's growing, and growing with it is the industry of trail running films. You know, when I started running trail running races back in 2001, you know, there might have been one or two films out there.
Right.
Now, you know, every year there's 50 to 100 films that are made each year. And so there aren't a lot of films to choose from. And so what we do is we, starting usually around January 1st of each year, we open up for film submissions and we ask filmmakers to submit films to us and we watch them all. And that is a lot of fun. That's one of my favorite parts of the job for sure. Cause there's so many different stories out there to be told and so many different ways to tell the stories, and filmmakers are so creative. They're coming up with new ways to, you know, to do the graphics or, you know, all kinds of different things.
Yeah.
And so we have two different things that we select films for. We have our tour, which we're kicking off, in mid-October. And then we also have our three-day festival in Seattle, which we normally do at the beginning of the tour, but the theater wasn't available, so we had to do it at the end of the tour. But either way, it's the big celebration where we show about a two-hour show. But then at the three-day festival, we do 4 2-hour shows, sometimes even 2.5 hours. So we show over 10 hours of films, a different set of films each show. So we're able to show a whole lot more at the big festival in Seattle. And also at the big festival in Seattle, we do an awards contest for a variety of awards categories, like best amateur film, best short film, best mid-length film, best use of humor, best cinematography, stuff like that. And so we have $1,000 prize for a lot of those awards, and then a couple of them are even more money than that. And so that's one thing that we select the films for. And we actually use judges to pick those winners. Last year we had a panel of 12 judges. I think this year we'll even have more. For the tour, it's a little bit different. We're trying to pick the very newest stuff and the stuff that you probably haven't seen before that's not available. Because a lot of the films, you know, they're created for sponsors or they're created for one reason or another. And the filmmakers put them out on the internet almost immediately, usually for free. Sometimes you got to pay for them.
Mm-hmm.
But for the tour, we like to try to show stuff as much as possible that's not, hasn't been released yet, or at very least is not for free on the internet. So you're basically getting more bang for your buck when you come to the tour or show, and you're getting to see something that you haven't seen.
Yeah.
So those are kind of the two different things that we choose for. And so I get to do a lot of that work, and it's a lot of fun. And it's hard. It's actually a hard choice, especially for the tour, because we've only got the 2 hours. So we've got to cram in as many films as we can into that short time period. And every year we have to leave out a few that I really wish we could show on tour. So maybe one day we'll grow to the size where maybe we could do two nights in every city and show two different film lineups. Like we do in Seattle.
Now, I've seen a couple of your films. I was telling you earlier tonight that I had seen one, I think that maybe was shown in a prior year, about the Oregon Coast 50K. And it was with Kim. Was that the woman's name? Kim something.
Yeah, Kim Tashima. Kimberly Newberry now. Her and Ethan have gotten married.
Okay.
Yeah, that is an interesting film. So Kim, I think that was her first attempt at running 50K.
Mm-hmm.
And she had, you know, she had a lot of anxiety about it. And that manifested in some physical ways that really made it hard for her to get to the finish line. She was having trouble breathing. And, you know, it was definitely questionable if she'd make it to the finish, which obviously, you know, makes for a lot of drama, which is great for a film.
Yeah.
You know, as runners, you know, we love that story of the underdog. We love the story of somebody overcoming obstacles to get to the finish. And yeah, that's a great example of, you know, the kind of films we show. We definitely get questions where, you know, oh, are we just going to be watching somebody run, you know, step after step after step? Like that sounds really boring.
It's right.
Like, Like, no, like, obviously that you're watching people run, but it's part of telling a story.
Right.
You know, whether it's like in Kim's case, you know, the story of her run that day, or in some other, like a film we're showing this year, you know, there's this relatively new race in Canada that is kind of blurring the lines between the traditional ultra running race with some elements that are maybe more found in adventure racing or in obstacle racing. Mm-hmm. And so it's a multi-day run with like some challenges thrown in. I mean, obviously running for multiple days is hard enough, but additional challenges like having to carry logs or having to swim across a river. Whereas like in a normal, you know, ultra running race, you know, like say Western States, there's a river crossing, but when the river is deep enough that you would have to swim, they usually actually put you on a raft and ferry you across.
Oh, okay.
This race, they intentionally, you know, make you swim the river.
Uh-huh.
Even though the river is freezing cold and it's at night for a lot of the runners when they get there. And so that story is kind of the story of this new race, but it's also kind of an example of, I think, the theme of this year's festival is in part like where's the sport going? You know, there's a lot of new races out there over the last 5-10 years that the sport's really grown in.
Yeah.
Is those obstacle races and adventure races and longer and harder races like the 200 milers, like the Tahoe 200 or the Moab 240, which is coming up this weekend, or harder and harder, you know, races. We have a 50K race in Colorado that has 19,000 feet of elevation gain. Runners up to 19 hours to finish the race, which is, you know, we have some pretty hard races here in the Northwest, and
yeah,
we normally give runners 8 or 9 hours to finish. So we're giving more than double what we would normally give for a really hard race. And the course record for that race is over 14 hours for the winning time.
Wow.
You know, which is triple, you know, the normal winning time for the average 50K.
Yeah.
So those are some of the ways that the sport's kind of evolving. And then also with the people going to set speed records, mm-hmm, fastest known times on really long sections of trail. And so those are kind of two major themes that are in our film festival this year. And it wasn't necessarily intentionally that way, but I think a lot of the films that are being made right now are kind of focusing on the crazier and harder races and the FKTs, which are becoming, FKTs, but then also just people going out and even average runners going out and running something like the John Muir Trail on their own. Instead of doing maybe a 100-mile race that year, they're going to do the John Muir Trail, which is 216 miles. And so our festival this year seems to be highlighting some of those new things in the sport.
So that you may have kind of answered one of my questions, and it was that the other trail running film that I have looked at recently was the one with Alan Carano running the John Muir Trail and trying to complete it. I know, of course, he would have also loved to have had an FKT, but I think his goal was actually to finish the whole thing, and he tried several times and didn't, but we interviewed him on Run to the Top, and it was a really interesting interview. And my question was relating to what made you pick that film for your film festival. So is there more to add to what made you pick it than what you've already explained?
Well, yeah, one of the things that I really like about that film is it highlights, I think, about 6 different runners,
right,
that made various attempts on that trail.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was neat. That's different and creative. That's something that a filmmaker, I haven't seen that done before. Normally you focus on one person,
mm-hmm,
or one group of people doing one single run.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that I really liked about that was that they went into the history of the FKT. They actually go into how that term was coined with Peter Bachwin and Buzz Burrell, who kind of started the FKT website and kind of first kind of popularized that idea of, you know, you can you can set a record, a time record on a trail, but a lot of these trails, you don't have like an official record keeper. Like, how do you know what the fastest time is?
Right.
And so they were like, they were looking in old newspaper articles. They were talking to rangers. They were trying to figure it out. And they're like, well, it's kind of unknown to a certain degree. And so basically what they said is like, we're going to call it the fastest known time, because from all of our research, this is what we know, that so-and-so did it at such and such time. And so based on that, we're going to call it the fastest known time. And so that, I think, is really kind of helpful to the community to have that little bit of history and little kind of educational piece, because it is an aspect of the sport that's still kind of a fringe thing that a lot of people might not understand or know about. but it's an important thing to know, that if you're going to go out and run, you know, say you have a 50-mile trail that goes through your backyard or whatever, and you want to go out there and be the record holder, there's a little bit of a process now, and you would want to follow that. There was actually a case, I think 2 years ago, on the Appalachian Trail, that a woman made a claim that she had done it faster than anybody else, but she didn't have really good evidence or witnesses to back that up. And so there was a lot of questions and uncertainty. Mm-hmm. And so if you go to the FKT website, you can learn about the proper ways to document it, so then it can be more official and more credible.
Yeah. Oh.
Because that's the hard thing is, you know, when you're dealing with trails out in the middle of nowhere, someone can't watch you the whole time, but you can have your GPS, you know, recording your data. You know, you can have witnesses at least certain checkpoints.
Right. Right. Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons why I included that film. But also, the John Muir Trail is just beautiful. And so that's just like a place that, for me, I would love to go run there. And, and it's a place that, you know, one idea with the film festival is I like the idea of inspiring people to do things that they might not have done before, totally, or to go to places they might not have gone otherwise.
Yeah.
And so that's a great thing, is to highlight beautiful spots like the John Muir Trail.
Good for you. So do tell us about some of the other films that you have lined up for this year. Give us a little bit of a teaser on some of those, and or
sure,
some of the runners who are involved in them.
Yeah, well, we've got a variety. We've got 10 different films. In addition to two that we've already talked about, there's another two that are kind of on the same idea of trying to run, you know, a certain route faster than anybody else, or or in one case, it's possible no one else has ever done it before. So one is called Faster, and it's about Christoph Tuscher running the Washington section of the Pacific Crest Trail, possibly being the first person to ever run just that section. People have done speed attempts on the entire PCT, but we don't think anybody's ever focused on just that one section.
Okay.
And then the other one also takes place in Washington. And Richard Kresser, also known as Dick, he's a mountaineer and a skier as well as a trail runner. And he came up with the idea to summit the four major volcanoes in the Northwest, which is Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, and Mount Hood, to summit those and also run the trail that loops around them.
Wow.
So that was like about 247 miles of running plus going up and down four mountains. So we have those. So those are all kind of the same theme of doing, you know, crazy non-races.
Mm-hmm.
We also have a film about a race in Hong Kong, a short film that highlights kind of a guy and a lady who ran that race, and kind of telling their story of their race a little bit. We've got a short film that highlights what it's like to be a trail runner in the country of Oman, which is quite exotic, quite different than anything we've kind of ever shown before.
Wow.
To have a film from that part of the world. Yeah. So I have a film from Hong Kong, a film from Oman. We've got a short film from Hawaii. A couple of runners went out and ran the Kalalau Trail, which is a really tough trail on the island of Kauai. I've actually ran it a couple of times and can vouch for how dangerous it can be. It can be very slippery. The mud is very slick there. And then there's also sometimes you get torrential downpours and the creeks that you have to cross become raging rivers that there's usually a few people each year that kind of don't survive crossing those creeks. They actually had pretty nice weather when they ran it for those films, so you'll see that. But so highlighting another beautiful place. And then we have a short film about this guy, Brad, who developed cancer, brain cancer, and is kind of a little bit about his recovery from that and getting back into running after dealing with surgeries and chemo and all that stuff. And a really kind of touching film about that and kind of the strength of the trail running community and how we can all kind of help each other out.
Wow, what a variety.
Yeah,
you must be both excited and also really happy with being involved in this whole process.
Oh, for sure. And, you know, each year you know, some people ask me, like, you know, because I'm going to we've got over 40 shows of the tour that we're going to do around the country, and I'll be at about 2/3 of them as the MC, and we've got a few guest MCs to do some of the other cities. But I'll see these films, you know, over 20 or 30 times, mm-hmm. and in past years, like, I never got tired of them. I'd sit there in the audience or in the theater with the audience, and I'd enjoy listening to the reaction from the crowd and how it would vary from city to city. And, you know, would they laugh at the same, you know, funny thing that, you know, the crowd in Nashville laughed at? Would they laugh in Atlanta, or would they laugh in New York, or would they laugh in San Francisco? And, you know, or, you know, would they ooh and ah, or would they cringe? And so, I really enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. And like I said before, the filmmakers are really good they're really getting good at what they do. And I'm honored to be able to share these films with everybody.
Well, I think it's really cool that you're doing it, and the running community loves seeing ourselves, you know.
For sure.
And it is also interesting how we keep finding more and more ways to like increase the potential for running, all of these different color runs and running to the tops of mountains. And, you know, it's great. I mean, it's because running itself is just such a great thing. And then all of these other additional aspects of it just make it maybe more fun, more diverse, make it something that you can think of being involved in for the rest of your life and never getting bored.
Right. Yeah. Each day you go out for a run, it's different. And yeah, there's people out there are making it, getting very creative with coming up with new ways. But also, I love just going to the track and doing a track workout and running around in circles. So,
runners would understand that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Would necessarily, but I agree with you completely. Now, tell about some of the cities that you're going to be visiting, because you said 40 cities or even more, maybe.
Yeah, we have a bunch lined up. So myself, I'm starting with the California cities. So Auburn, which is is where the Western States 100 finishes, is the first city I'm going to. And then Healdsburg, which is just north of the Bay Area, and then two nights in downtown San Francisco, and then Monterey, and then LA, and then San Diego. And then we start making our way.
Let me interject one thing. All of this is on your Film Fest website, and you'll be giving us that information at the end of this talk. But
correct.
So continue.
Yeah. Well, I don't need to list, I guess, every city, but we'll go from California to Arizona, and then to Colorado, and then Utah and Montana, and then for me back up into the Northwest to Oregon and Washington. And then we're also doing shows in Texas, Chicago, Cleveland, a couple other cities in Ohio, a couple of cities in New York, including Brooklyn, Boston, And then up and down the East Coast, you know, Washington, D.C., and Baltimore, and Atlanta, and a few places in Tennessee and North Carolina. And
you must be quite the organizer.
I definitely don't mind organizing things. It's something I feel like I've kind of have a natural tendency towards. And yeah, it hasn't gotten old yet. And I'm always coming up with new ideas.
Now, who are you working with, partnering with on these films?
So the film festival is part of a nonprofit that I helped to co-found a few years ago. And we put on both the Trail Running Film Festival plus a couple of music festivals. And that's called Outdoor Arts and Recreation. It's based in Washington State. And our mission is basically to combine the arts and outdoor recreation in really fun and creative ways. Mm-hmm. And to try to increase the access for folks that are challenged at getting into the outdoors or participating in the arts. Right now, what our goal is to use these festivals as fundraisers for our mission to eventually be working with kids or veterans or disabled folks to actually get them out on trips into the outdoors, get them active, mm-hmm. get them involved in the arts in creative new ways and try to give back to the folks that kind of need it the most. A lot of us that do run already or go to these kinds of festivals, you know, we already have that ability to do that. What we'd like to do is use all of the energy and resources that these festivals can generate to do even more and to help the folks that need help.
I like that.
Yeah. And with our races, that's a big motivation for me as well is I really feel like the more time people spend out on the trails, out in the woods, exercising in general, you know, the healthier they're going to be, the happier they're going to be, and the more they're going to appreciate this world that we're in and the communities that we live in, and the more that we're going to look out for each other and take care of this planet. And that's something that's really important to me. And so with everything that we're doing, that's kind of the direction we're heading in is trying to make this place a better place while having some fun while we're doing it.
Not a bad combination. So what message would you like to share with the listeners about running and what it means to you? Maybe you've already kind of recapped it with what you just said, but you know, you do races, you do films, you do festivals. It seems like it is maybe a way of broadening the exposure or the potential for giving people an opportunity to look at all of the wonderful things that are out there in being physical and in seeing the world and in also sharing it with a community of like-minded people.
Yeah, that's definitely it. You know, probably my favorite thing to do with our races, other than coming up with the race course in the first place, they're probably tied. I love doing the research part. I loved running around trying to find a new location for a race. But the other side of that coin is kind of the culmination of all that work is when the runners finish, I try to be there standing at the finish line for every single finisher and give them a high five or a hug. And I just love giving folks the opportunity to go out and challenge themselves and meet new people and have fun experiences. And we just try to make our races these, like you said before, basically a party with some running thrown in. So at the finish line, we've got kegs of beer and live music and a mobile pizza oven cooking really good pizza for everybody. And so basically creating an opportunity for people to come together that might not know each other, might be from different ends of the spectrum, you know, politically or socially or economically.
Yeah.
And get everybody together and have a good time and realize that we have at least one thing in common. And so for me to be there at the finish line and, you know, to congratulate people on this challenge or this achievement that they've completed, it feels so good. And the festivals are kind of along the same line. It's bringing people together and having a good time. And I love meeting new people and going to new places. So yeah, that those are the things that motivate me and keep me going for sure.
You are really contributing so much to the running community. I can feel it, and also your innovation is very.
Oh, thanks.
Nice. Yeah. You're making it fun. You're adding new ideas, and you're a runner. So of course, I love that you're a runner. That's terrific. But you're expanding on that, which is also terrific.
I think like you said, I'm a runner, and I've just none of this was really created that consciously. I just kind of did what I would want to have. Like I tried to have the food and drinks at the finish line of the race that I would want to have if I was the one who was finishing the race. So yeah, I think when you have the runner's perspective, it maybe comes off as being more authentic, you know.
Totally.
So I just try to always stick to my roots on that. And so far it's been working.
Support for Run to the Top comes from Flava Naturals, a recently launched brand of chocolate and cocoa powder with 5 to 9 times the cocoa flavanol antioxidants of a typical dark chocolate bar. These increased levels are shown to support exercise performance, brain function, and heart health. This is achieved by starting with some of the highest antioxidant cocoa beans in the world and preserving flavanols using all natural preparation. Flava Bar chocolate bars and Flava Mix cocoa powder are perfect for pre- or post-workout, increasing circulation and the amount of oxygen and nutrients delivered to fatigued muscles. And equally important, Flava Bars and Flava Mix taste amazing. The Flava Natural Coffee Bar has become a favorite pre-long run snack. The caffeine gets your mind awake, and the flavanols help increase blood flow, which are both really needed before those early morning runs or when starting a long run after an exhausting day at work. We've put together an awesome 20% discount for you so you can try them yourself. Just go to flavanaturals.com and enter discount code RTTT for the 20% off your next order. That's F as in Fred, L as in love, A as in apple, V as in Victor, A as in apple, flavanaturals.com, and discount code RTTT. Let's move into the final kick then, and
sure.
I mentioned this to you before the interview, so you have a bit of an idea. What is your favorite local training run? And so we are talking training runs. So I don't know how many 100 or 200 mile training runs you do. You can tell us if you want, but what's a favorite in your area? And give us enough information that a person who would be driving to that place would be able to like find a place to park and know how to
start the
trail and that kind of information.
Yeah. Well, I have two. But I'll try to keep them both brief. They both actually start and finish very close to each other. They're both on the kind of the eastern edge of, they're just outside of the North Cascades National Park. So I live in one of the first towns on the east side of the park. And so if I drive from my house towards the national park, I'll come to these trailheads first. And the longer of the two is definitely one of my favorite runs to do close to home, but it's pretty long. It's a 50K, it's 30 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't do that very often, you know, so you wouldn't necessarily think of something like that as a regular training run, but it's so spectacular. I try to do it at least once a year. If I was less busy, I'd probably do it once a month. It's on the Pacific Crest Trail, and it's between the two northernmost road crossings on the trail. So just a little bit south of the Canadian border, there is Hart's Pass. And then if you run 30 miles south of there, you get to Rainy Pass, which is on Highway 20, which is the main road that goes from where I live up and over the mountains towards the ocean. And so that's a point-to-point run. You need a lot of logistical support. What a lot of local runners will do is, in fact, I helped a couple of guys with this just a couple of weeks ago, is I dropped them off at a trailhead. They had already pre-dropped off a car at the other end, and they just ran to their car. And I went out and did another run in that same area. And then the other run is called the Heather Maple Pass Loop. And it's only 6 miles long, but it's in the same vicinity. And you start right there at the same trailhead that you would end at Rainy Pass. And when you, in both of these areas, what makes them so great is the views that you get. The 30-mile run, you're running up on high mountain ridges almost the whole time, above the trees, limitless jagged mountains all around you in every direction. This time of the year, you have the fall colors where all the larch trees and the berry bushes, there's goldens and reds and everything. And it's just beautiful. And so depending on the amount of time you have, you can do the 8-mile loop, or if you got all day and a lot of logistical support, you can do a point to point run.
Nice.
Yeah, those are both just beautiful, challenging, fun runs to do.
Sound amazing. And I from listening to another podcast that you were on, I know you're trying to get a potential race from the Rainy Pass to, what was the name of the other pass?
Hart's Pass.
It put together.
Yeah, you've done your homework.
Yeah. So, well, it was fun. It was fun listening.
Yeah, I don't know if that race will ever get approved. The Forest Service can be really protective of the PCT.
Yeah.
Especially in certain sections, and I don't know if they'll ever let us do that race, but it'll always be in the back of my mind.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that information with us. So,
sure.
Question number two here, favorite or recommended running or trail running book, running or trail running?
Yeah, well, the one I've read the most might be a little bit boring for some people. It's just a training book. It's the Jack Daniels.
Oh, yeah.
Running guide.
Mm-hmm.
I love when I have time and the energy and the focus to really train hard. Uh-huh. I use a lot of his principles for training.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's a book that I recommend to a lot of people who are looking for that kind of information. A more fun book, which is not really running related, that the most recent book I've read is called The Emerald Mile, which when you hear the title, you might think running because, Emerald Mile, but it's actually about boating the Grand Canyon and actually three whitewater raft guides who paddled it faster than anyone has ever done it before. They did it during a flood time back in the early 80s.
Yeah.
And it's a thrilling book. I absolutely loved it. So I've been recommending that to everybody.
Okay. And Jack Daniels he's like the expert on altitude as well as many other things. But the guy, if you're looking for, scientific research oriented stuff, he's one of the top in the world.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
Words of wisdom or humor? And humor is always appreciated. If you have a funny story you want to share with us, wisdom is, of course, useful too.
Yeah. I tend to do some goofy stuff out on the trail for sure. I'm drawing a blank right now.
Yeah, I understand.
But what? One thing that kind of ties into a theme that I definitely suggest for a lot of runners is never give up on yourself. When you're out there running, when you're in a race, it might seem like it's too daunting of a task and you can't make it. Or you maybe you've taken a wrong turn and you think like, oh no, I've added too many extra miles. I don't want to do this anymore. Or your stomach is upset. I've experienced myself on both sides where I've kind of given up and I wish I hadn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I've experienced what happens when I don't give up and things turn around and everything works out. So that's like, I guess my little bit of suggestion. It's too long of a story for right now, but I definitely have a, a story of my first 100 miler. I was leading the race for a long time and something went wrong. And I wish I had kept my focus and kept going at the same intensity I had been all day. So there's that. I'll leave you, the listeners, with a cliffhanger, and maybe if you ever have me back on the podcast, I'll tell the whole story. All or right, if somebody's ever going for a run with me, they can ask me to tell the story.
That sounds good.
It's great for when you're on a long run.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because the idea of not giving up on yourself, that has come up so many times in this particular question. I think, you know, most of us who have run have experienced times when we felt like giving up. And when you give up, there's a lot of soul searching when you give up. And if you, as you said, if you continue, then most of the time there's a very different feeling at the end of whatever the goal was. And that's come up more than anything else in terms of wisdom is just don't give up on yourself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's usually a chance for redemption if you just stay positive and keep going.
Cool. Yeah, no, that's really true. So a subject about running that, or a person about running that you think would be a good add to our podcast list?
Yeah, well, I definitely, you know, I'm very trail focused. And so a lot of the stuff that I was thinking of revolves around the trail mm-hmm. world. Mm-hmm. And there's a variety of people that have come to mind that I thought would be great. And there's one woman, her name is Caitlin Gerben, and she's won a lot of the races that we organize here in the Northwest. And mm-hmm. she's also done really well at Western States, kind of the mm-hmm. biggest 100 miler in the United States. And I don't think a lot of people know about her despite her success.
Huh.
And her husband always come out and volunteer at our races if they're not already running them. And they do a lot with the local running store and the local running club. And, you know, she's just like one of those people that, you know, I want to see succeed and I always root for. And I just have a feeling she also, they climb mountains and they ski and stuff. I feel like she'd be an interesting person to have on the podcast.
Oh, cool.
That was just a person that came to me that I feel like a lot of people wouldn't already know about.
Yeah. Now, do you happen to have contact information for her? Because
I do. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I could email that to you.
That would be super. I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Now, the big moment that you've been waiting for all of you have been waiting for, is more contact information on how our audience can follow through with your, all of the things that you're involved in, James, the Trail Running Film Fest, Rain Shadow Running, and you as a runner competitor. How can they keep in touch with you?
Yeah, well, for me personally, the best way is probably to find me on Facebook. I used to have a blog and I just hardly ever wrote anything in it. Although that story that I was telling you about my first 100 miler and some of my other 100 mile stories are there. And I think that's at varnermiles.com.
You think.
But I might only type in it like once a year or something. So don't expect a lot of new content.
Okay.
But yeah, Facebook's a great way to keep up with me.
Okay.
But for our races, rainshadowrunning.com. We're also on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. And we've got a bunch of races in Oregon and Washington and that crazy one in Colorado. And then the Trail Running Film Festival is at trailfilmfest.com. And then all of our festivals, including the Trail Run Film Fest, all of that's under our outdoorartsandrec.org website as well. If you want to see our music festivals that have all the outdoor recreation included as well.
And all of this will be in our show notes. So you as listeners can, of course, try to copy it down or remember it by listening to this podcast, but you also do the runnersconnect.net running podcast It has every podcast that we've ever done with show notes. So it has links and lots of information. People can then refer back to these things and listen to them over and over if they, you know, if they're so inclined. So thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast at Run to the Top. And be sure to follow us at the Runners Connect Winner's Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB. And please do subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. You'll be notified every Wednesday when the new episode is published. James Varner, founder of Trail Running Film Fest and so much more, thank you for speaking with us today.
Oh, sure. Thank you, Stephanie. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. I agree. And not to forget, thank you, our audience, for listening. We'll be back next week with Professor Tim Noakes, who will speak to us about sports hydration dangers and high-fat, low-carb eating for athletes. It's going to be very informative, possibly controversial, and fun. Tim Noakes is an awesome scientist, runner, and speaker. And this is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top. Thanks for being with us. Have a great one.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.